We're really fortunate to have Natalie Warren in studio tonight. She's been on the Roadhouse, I don't know, several times before since her 2011 paddle with her friend Ann Rejo, and that paddle took her 2,000 miles from Minneapolis to Hudson Bay. They followed Eric Severide's route in his famous book, Canoeing with the Cree. I think you were the first two women to complete that trip, weren't you, Natalie? As far as you know.
Yeah, the first two women to publicly complete it.
Sure. How did you decide to do that? What prompted you to say, hey, let's jump in the canoe and we're going to be gone for a while?
Well, that I would have to credit to Anne, actually. We were seniors at St. Olaf College, and she had read Canoeing with the Cree. I had never read it before, and she approached me one day as the craziness of graduating and finding a job was upon us, and she literally threw the book at me and said, I think we should do this, and left. And I immediately opened the book, and instead of writing my paper, I spent 3 or 4 hours reading it from cover to cover, told her that it sounded awesome and that we should spend 3 months living in a canoe after we graduated.
Well, that's a big decision at that point. You know, you're just getting out of college, and it's already a big deal to get out of school and move on to whatever's next. But you found a new spot to be.
Absolutely. And it was great for me career-wise, too, which when we decided to do it, we thought it would be a huge gap in our resumes. Mm-hmm. We're supposed to do XYZ after we graduate. And it turned into my career. It's what I do
yes.
now. I work in rivers. I work with river communities and watersheds and canoe trips. And it shaped my life in a way that I couldn't have known before the trip.
Now, where were you headed before you decided to do that canoe trip?
Agriculture, sustainability stuff. Uh-huh. I was an environmental policy major, but still going to a liberal arts school, you're kind of all over the place, nothing too specific, and shooting in the dark applying for jobs. So uh-huh. I was very happy to decide to do something and not have to worry about all that.
And it has led you in a direction that the river took you, but also your background fits very well into what you do now. You've started the Wild River Academy. Can you tell folks what that is and where that concept came, other
yeah.
than, of course, your trip?
Absolutely. So when Ann and I did the trip for 3 months, I learned more about what I had been studying in school than I had in the 4 years that I was in school. And I do acknowledge that 4 years studying it probably prepared me for the experiential component to fully digest what I was learning. But the river is a dynamic natural classroom. You can't paddle an urban river without learning about energy, without learning about the people who live there, how they use the waterway, without seeing, you know, we were paddling over cornfields. And after I learned in my environmental policy classes about buffer zones and all that, I knew that the nitrogen, the phosphorus, all these things on the fields were going straight into the river, we're going into another river, we're going into the ocean. And you really start to connect those things when you experience them. So I started Wild River Academy to share the river as a dynamic classroom with youth. We have a focus on low-income youth, and we lead 3 to 5 day trips on local rivers to have a program and a speaker every day. So we're camping and canoeing in between, but we talk to experts, key stakeholders, DNR, pollution control agency. We stay with farmers. We tour wastewater treatment plants and try to learn as much as we can while we're on the river.
How are the youngsters chosen? Do you work with schools then to get these folks excited about joining your adventures?
Yeah, it's so I started the organization in 2012, and as with anything, you learn as you go. Individual sign up wasn't working for us very well, and so we started partnering with schools, especially charter schools, and as an extension of their learning. And we take out Upper Mississippi Academy, Rivers Edge Academy, so all of the students on one trip are from one school. Mm-hmm. And then our big partner for low-income youth is College Possible, and they are a national organization, and they work with youth that come from families that make less than $25,000 annual income. And we offer their program free of cost. So we raise money to take out about 40 kids from their program on the river for 5 days.
And how do the finances work for you? Do you get money from grants to cover everything, or are these schools are helping you with the cost of what you do? Or?
Yeah, it's constantly changing because we're so young, but we just received our 501c3 designation last fall, which is a huge game changer for us. Mm-hmm. Ideally, you should have a third, a third, a third. So you have fee-based trips, you have money from grants and foundations, and then you have individual donations. And we initially were working with a lot of individual donations and mini grants from a fiscal sponsor. So we had to use somebody else's 501c3 number, which is basically, it's a tax ID number that says it's, if people donate to you or give money to you, then they get a break on their taxes. It's an official federally recognized nonprofit. So now that we have that, we're eligible for $200,000, $500,000. You just start working up, proving yourself in the community. And the more money you have, the more money you can get. So we're kind of climbing that ladder right now.
Okay. And that means that the underserved youngsters that you're bringing into that program can fit in as long as you're funded.
Absolutely. There's a lot of funding for getting underserved communities out to paddle rivers and do environmental education. So we're definitely fitting that niche.
You must have some help.
Always.
I mean, when you're going down the rivers, you've got how many youngsters at a time?
8 to 10.
And how, on that part of, on the Wild River Academy part of it, how far are you taking them?
Oh, we usually go about 15 miles a day on the water. Huh. Although we went during, it wasn't full flood, but we went in June on the Minnesota River last year and we were just cruising. So I think we did 28 miles in one day on accident.
Yeah, it was really going.
Yeah.
River was going. And it must be really, as far as you're concerned, it must feel really good to see these kids when they get it.
Mm-hmm.
Is that, can you tell a little about how that happens and you know, how do you explain what this river means?
Absolutely. So our first group of College Possible girls that we took out, we started at an organic farm. They do grass-fed beef. And one of the girls had never pet a dog before, for example.
Really?
So seeing that happen was something so simple but so meaningful to her. Uh-huh. And there was another girl who said she had never watched the sunset. She just lives around tall buildings, and she's never sat and watched the sunset. And we were out in the country watching the sunset in over the fields, and it was so amazing to watch her watch the sunset.
Mm-hmm.
And so that trip went on. We learned a lot about the history in the river. They learned how to fish from the Minocqua program, the DNR. And we were lucky to be able to get our group to present at the Minnesota River Congress, which was great for us because usually the students after our trip don't have to give a presentation. Oh. But right after they finished their 5 days, they were forced to sit down and say, what did we learn? And they talked about things that I wouldn't even guess that they would talk about, things that really, really impacted them. And they shared them with over 100 people. Mm. So they had to digest, reflect right away, and share with us and all of those stakeholders in the river what they had learned. And I could really tell at that moment that our program was very impactful.
Mm-hmm. And you think that, I imagine the idea is that not only do they learn, but now they're going to tell all their friends, because this is a very meaningful experience for those youngsters.
Oh, yeah. We had about 50 students from College Possible sign up last year. We could only take 20, and already they told all their friends, and I'm looking forward to taking quite a few more of their students out.
How many trips will you plan this year of that type?
Of that type, we have 4 trips, 10 students each, and 11 trips total for the summer.
Uh-huh. And as far as safety, when the kids are out on the water, do you think you can, if something happens, you have enough help there to?
Absolutely. Yeah. Mm-hmm. We have 2 guides. It's 5 students per guide, so we feel pretty in control. Mm-hmm. And before the trip, we do a canoe training with the students at a lake in the cities. So we go over what happens if your canoe tips. This is what you do. If you're in a current, it's different than if you're in a lake. We go over all of the protocol, and our staff are trained. So nothing terrible has happened yet.
I mean, when you get a hold of kids that haven't even seen a sunset before, and then you throw them on a river, that's a big deal.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, that's great. Now, this Wild River Academy isn't the only place that you take kids. You have another program that can reach kids that maybe can't make this trip.
Right. So a program of Wild River Academy, after our summer programs are done, we have a fall program called Paddle Forward. And through that, we paddle a major river in the United States every fall, the length of a river. We have, our first year, we paddled the Mississippi River, and we had 11 young adults on that trip. And you can just imagine the implications of traveling 70 days, one river with 11 people. It was an adventure. What we did for that is we had schools follow us online in the same vein as Anne Bancroft, Will Steger. They have millions of kids all over the world following their trips and learning about climate change when they're in a remote area of the world. So we're doing a very similar thing, except we're not in that remote area. We're actually able to stop and visit schools and give presentations while we're on the trip itself. So that educational model is called adventure learning. As our expeditioners do the trip, we post pictures, videos, blogs, discussion questions. We video chat with the students. We share our adventure with them so they don't have to take 3 months to paddle the Mississippi River, because it's not feasible for most people to do that trip. But we can share everything that we do and everyone we meet, the issues along the river, with thousands of people through 6 to 11 people going on a trip.
And how do you go about lining up the schools? And does that kind of just kind of work itself out? I mean, once there's an organization that helps you with that, or you just have to get out there and find these
places?
Gotta
be a hustler.
Oh, yeah.
I do lots of cold calling.
Okay.
But we figured out a pretty good system. You get your target market. We did the Illinois River in September. We had 45 schools alone in the basin following our trip, and that river is only 300 miles. So you can imagine the attention that we got in the basin. You reach out to the schools. They say that you don't actually do something about something you see unless you see it 7 times. So I take that to heart. And that's really? A phone call. That's something in the mail. That's an email. That's reaching out to mayors, city councils.
Okay.
And we have a whole planning committee for this.
Wow.
So as we build clout, it'll get easier, but there's definitely a way to get things done when you don't have national attention quite yet.
So your winters are busy then, too.
Very.
Because what are you planning now for 2015? What river are you focused on?
So this September is actually the Minnesota River, which is kind of a cakewalk to plan, to be honest, because we already do trips there. I know I have relationships there from back when Ann and I did our trip, but that river has a special place in my heart, and it needs so much attention. It's been, in recent history, it's been neglected quite a bit, and it's gotten better pollution-wise. A lot of the physical trash has gone out of the river, but there's still a lot of work that needs to get done, and there are community members that are showing interest in making a change, revitalizing their towns, opening up to the water, and really starting to promote paddle sports. So we're trying to hit that river at a good time to bring a lot of attention to the water trail.
Now, that is another focus that you have, is promoting recreational use along the rivers.
Yes.
Or waterways in general.
Mm-hmm. I'm currently doing research for the River Management Society and the National Park Service to define how communities economically benefit from their water trail. So I also do public speaking. So one of my presentations is called Your Community from the Paddler's Perspective. And I talk about what makes a thriving river community. It's not just access to the water. It's not just having a path for people to use. It's seeing the big picture, how everything is connected. Can I canoe to your town and get off? Is there a way for me to get into town if I want to go to a restaurant? Is there a bed and breakfast? How does that affect the local economy? Can you bring people from the city to, say, New Ulm or Granite Falls along the Minnesota River to spend money in your town, but they're there because of the river, and trying to take advantage of that? And I'm doing research right now, going through publications, and everything that I've found says that when towns start promoting their water trail, their economy diversifies and improves. So trying to reach out to communities and say, hey, this is really, really worth your time and money.
So what happens on land, which we're so lucky to have something like the Superior Hiking Trail, Dick, can also happen on water.
Yep.
And does.
Absolutely, it does.
Yeah. Well, you're also busy right now writing a book about your first travel. I mean, your first water travel of a big scope. And, of course, that was the one following Eric Severoid's route. How are you doing with the writing process?
Right now, I'm doing better than I was when I started 2 years ago. For the first time in a very long time, I have not had to work a part-time job to pay the bills. So I have time and flexibility to really sit down, discipline myself, write those chapters. And because I've been talking about those stories for so long, they come naturally. Mm-hmm. And once I started, it's so easy for me to just start every day writing a story that is familiar to me. I don't need to look up facts. Everything is because I've experienced it. And that mm-hmm. makes it easier and more flowing to write.
Yeah. And do you just let it flow? You just write it out and then go back and edit it later or look at it again later? Or do you kind of edit as you go? Or how do you approach that?
I actually have... So at one of my presentations, maybe a year and a half ago, I went to St. Olaf and I had a presentation at Midwest Mountaineering. Someone showed up. He's a 7-year-old man wearing a St. Olaf hat, a St. Olaf sweater, St. Olaf sweatpants. Very excited to meet me. Said that he had followed our trip up to the bay. Mm. And I told him that I need someone to proofread what I've been writing. And I send him probably 2 to 3 letters a week with a new chapter. And
really?
Then he sends me letters back, which is a great way to connect just alumni-wise. But it's also someone's keeping me accountable for those things and giving suggestions, although most of his responses are that everything's really great, so maybe I need a more critical eye at some point. But at the time being, I'm just writing as much as possible, whatever comes to me, and once I'm done accounting the whole story from my point of view, mm-hmm. I will go back. I'm talking to Anne now about her going back, looking at what I've written and saying, oh, that's not how I pictured that at all. So hopefully she'll go back and write her understanding of different major stories. She's really busy. She's getting her PhD at Notre Dame right now. Huge nerd, changing the world. But hopefully she'll have a say in the book as well.
Yeah. Now, the gentleman that's helping you with looking at what you're writing, does he have a background in writing or he just has the interest?
He paddled a part of the Mississippi River after he graduated St. Olaf. And so I think he has a soft spot for what I do and the trip that Anne and I took. So I'm not sure if there's any writing credibility there, but he's very interested, passionate about it.
Yeah,
and
which is a big deal.
Yeah. And at this point in writing, you really need encouragement more than anything. And mm-hmm. then you can go back and to the nitty gritty and say, you know, am I a good writer? I don't know.
Well, we look for, I imagine you are going to be a very good writer because just listening to you now recount it, you know, I'm sure that's going to come down on paper just as well.
I hope so.
Yeah. Well, we look forward to that book coming out at some point, and we also want to keep track of you. So what website can people go to look at to see about your initial trip, but also about what you're doing right now?
So wildriveracademy.com is the main organization website. We have a separate website for Paddle Forward because the way that students and communities follow us is online. So that is a completely different site where they can see where we are and use curriculum. So that's paddleforward.com, paddle the number 4, WARD.com. And then the Hudson Bay trip is hudsonbaybound.com. I have way too many websites.
Yeah,
and
you got
too
a
many
lot of work.
Email accounts. So hudsonbaybound.com. And I would just like to make a local shout out. Camp Chow, Sarah up at Trail Center, has sponsored our last two trips with some Camp Chow. And Stone Harbor has given us 2 boats for our organization. So we've gotten a lot of support from Grand Marais. It's always great to come back up here. Anne and I both went to Minojin, so we have a special place here.
And you also have another thing to promote tonight, and that's a band is playing up in this area.
You bet. The Step Rockets are playing at Papa Charlie's tonight and tomorrow night.
And I guess they got a really great drummer in that
They
group.
Have a very attractive drummer who might also be my boyfriend.
Okay, well, hey, Natalie Warren. Completed with her friend Ann Rejo, the first women to paddle 2,000 miles from Minneapolis to Hudson Bay, and they followed Eric Severide's route in the book, famous book, Canoeing with the Cree, and she's taken that much further with her efforts with Wild River Academy, and what was the other Paddle Forward?
Paddle Forward.
Paddle Forward organization. So, Natalie, thank you so much for coming and talking to us again tonight.
It's always a pleasure.
It was a great pleasure for us to have you here.